Welcome to the Rare Kidney Disease Show, part of the RKD Scientific Network and powered by Travere Therapeutics. We invite you to join us each episode and be inspired by the latest advancements in rare kidney disease research, management, and treatment from leading nephrology researchers and healthcare providers who are passionate about making a difference in patient outcomes. Today's podcast is an excerpt from the Rare Kidney Disease Scientific Network Summit, a collaborative event hosted by Travere Therapeutics. Travere Therapeutics is providing this podcast for informational purposes only. The audience is U.S. healthcare providers. The content of this podcast is not intended to provide medical advice. Only licensed healthcare providers can determine the right treatment for each patient. Any patients who may be listening to the podcast are encouraged to reach out to a healthcare provider. This podcast may contain opinions of our guests, which may not necessarily be that of Travere Therapeutics. Travere Therapeutics is not responsible for guest opinions. Some of the speakers and guests may be paid consultants or employees of Travere Therapeutics. We look forward to your interest in our podcast. By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge our privacy policy and terms and conditions, which can be found at Travere.com. To learn more about Travere Therapeutics and its products, visit our website. For a full list of FILSPARI's indications, warnings, cautions, and contraindications, visit FILSPARI.com. Results and patient experience may vary. U.S. federal law restricts Travere Therapeutics products to sale by or on the order of a healthcare provider. Prescription only.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Brad Rovin, Professor of Internal Medicine and Pathology at The Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. I'm also the chair of the RKD Scientific Network and Podcast. Welcome to the new Rare Kidney Disease Show, part of the RKD Scientific Network, sponsored by Travere Therapeutics. This podcast is being launched in order to provide the nephrology community with the latest knowledge of key data, expert perspective on latest advances, and also to highlight key clinical scenarios with respect to rare kidney diseases. Patients living with rare kidney disease have had, until now, limited treatment options and often experience progression of their disease to the need for dialysis or kidney transplantation. The importance of this warrants a need to raise awareness and address the unmet clinical needs in patient care, disease management, clinical trials, and new therapies. Today's podcast will include highlights from the inaugural 2023 RKD Scientific Network Summit. This was a 1.5-day event sponsored by Travere Therapeutics to gather the world's experts on rare kidney diseases, specifically highlighting IgA nephropathy and FSGS. 17 clinicians and researchers served as speakers, panel members, or steering committee members, and over 70 nephrologists from across the United States came together to shed new light on current RKD therapies, how they work, and their place in the treatment landscape. The main topics discussed included a newly proposed treatment paradigm for IgA nephropathy, therapeutics currently available and in development for IgA nephropathy and FSGS, current IPNA is the Pediatric Nephrology Society, current IPNA guidelines for nephrotic syndrome, as well as the role of endothelin in kidney disease, and a future thinking session to talk about clinical trial endpoints for new therapeutics. The attendees also heard from two patients living with rare kidney disease and their experiences with disease management, and the event was a huge success based on survey feedback. With that said, let's jump right into the first session of the summit. I had the pleasure of chairing a group of my colleagues and world leaders in IgA nephropathy to discuss how our approach to the management of this condition is evolving. Before diving deeply into a typical clinical scenario, let me recap first the current four-hit hypothesis for the development of IgA nephropathy.
All of you know about the four-hit hypothesis of IgA nephropathy, which is sort of our working model of how we think through IgA and think about how we might use therapeutics to intervene on the pathogenesis of IgA nephropathy. If you start in the left, The gut mucosa and other mucosal tissues are a source of IgA, as you know, and we think that at least to a large extent the mucosa is responsible for producing IgA that is galactose deficient, which is the sort of initiator, if you will, of IgA nephropathy. It's not sufficient on its own. We all have galactose deficient IgA, whether it's a qualitative or quantitative defect. The production of galactosylated IgA, that's hit number one. It gets into the circulation. And then we have, and genetic background undoubtedly contributes, production of IgG autoantibodies. So hit number two. Hit number three is the formation of immune complexes that eventually wind up in the kidney, which is hit number four, and initiate in the mesangium, mesangial deposition, and initiate glomerular injury. And you can see in the little picture of the glomerulus highlighted of some of the things that IgA immune complexes or immune conglomerates in the mesangium might initiate, including proliferation, inflammation, cytokine production, extracellular matrix production, etc.
Understanding the underlying pathophysiology of IgA nephropathy helps us to identify the various targets upon which our choice of therapy can impact. This is really crucial as several novel therapeutic options are now available to us and many more are advancing into late-stage development. This podcast will mainly focus on those therapies that are available for us to prescribe right now.
Let's start out with a case, and this will sort of kick off the discussion. This is a 28-year-old patient. He's referred to you for proteinuria and hematuria. He had no other medical history. Urine abnormalities were found because of a work-related physical exam by dipstick. And the consult referral said 1 plus blood, 2 plus protein on dipstick. Okay, not atypical. His history was unremarkable. He never noticed blood in his urine. He never really noticed foamy urine. And he had no family history of kidney disease. He was healthy appearing on physical exam. You can see his weight there, his blood pressure, etc. I specifically note no skin rash to just remove the idea of IgA vasculitis right off the bat. And then his laboratory data showed a serum creatinine, which we can assume is pretty normal, a GFR, EGFR, as you can see. He had a spot urine protein to creatinine ratio of about 1.7 gram per gram, and his urine sediment showed 5 red cells per high power field, and half of them were acanthocytes. And this is his kidney biopsy. And you know, I made this case up, so don't hold me to everything. This is for discussion purposes. And his MEST-C score, which we're going to talk about at length, is M1 and everything else is zero. Okay, so a mild IgA to start with.
This case study is undoubtedly similar to individuals we have all managed in our clinics, and I would expect that no one will be surprised with our initial management choices.
Without further ado, I am going to tell you what we did. The patient is treated with an ARB, pushed to its maximum labeled dose, well-tolerated, blood pressure looks wonderful, right? We're all happy with this. 6 months later, the patient feels well, serum creatinine is rock stable, UPCR has decreased to 0.6, and the patient continues to show glomerular hematuria. Okay, not atypical. And then after 1 year of this, still stable, UPCR is 0.7, glomerular hematuria is still present, an occasional white cell, and no bacteria. Okay, so John, we're golden, right? We've won. This person has done what we said to do in KDIGO. His proteinuria is below a gram. Blood pressure is wonderful. Lifestyle is modified. He's got no problems for the future, and he's just going to live forever, right?
The challenge I put to Professor Barrett is a key consideration for all of us. Should we currently be satisfied with the outcome of our initial intervention, or do we need to strive for greater improvements?
I think for me, this guy needs more treatment. He's only 28, and we need to be thinking about what he's going to be like when he's 58.
So Dr. Barrett has suggested that we need to do more for this patient who has done very well so far according to our current standards.
While our initial treatment may be appropriate by today's standards, we really must be aware that the majority of our patients have decades of life in front of them.
What are we wanting to achieve in this guy? We want to turn off the production of pathogenic IgA, stop immune complexes forming, stop inflammation.
Professor Barrett introduces the concept of optimized foundational care, which means combining therapies instead of our current practice of maximizing the dose of ACEs and ARBs before further treatment optimization.
I think we need to rethink the kind of foundational care of proteinuric kidney disease.
How did we proceed with this patient, and what options are available for maintenance therapy?
Okay, so we're going back to our patient. The patient that we were talking about before was placed on sparsentan and Nefcon. So the idea was, let's get the proteinuria under control as best as we possibly can, and then also target something pathogenically. Okay, so IgA nephropathy itself. 9 months later, Nefcon was tapered off. The patient now has a serum creatinine of 1, so he's stable, and a protein to creatinine ratio of 0.25, an occasional red cell in the urine, no white cells, etc. So now, what would you do?
Now let's integrate this discussion into a possible way of approaching IgA nephropathy with targeted therapies that can affect different aspects of IgA nephropathy pathogenesis, and incorporate the idea that IgAN progresses more often than we thought and progresses even in patients with very low levels of proteinuria.
We're going to diagnose IgA by kidney biopsy. I'm going to start them on some sort of foundational therapy, okay? And that foundational therapy can be RAS or sparsentan or an ERA, potentially, depending on how the atrasentan trial comes out. Now, you have to me, you have to look at that biopsy and decide, is there a significant amount of inflammation on that biopsy? The first thing I want to do is get the inflammation under control. I would suggest that if we let ongoing inflammation, we're going to get S lesions, S and T lesions, right? So I want to control the inflammation. And so then I would probably throw in a systemic steroid or a complement inhibitor. Right now we just have the systemic steroid. We need to then stop the disease from continuing, just like any other immune disease. So then I would want to put in a disease modifying agent, mucosal steroid, a B-cell targeted therapy with question marks. Okay, so then we get the disease under control, and I think we need to start thinking about maintenance therapy. And then at some point, we're going to say, well, this disease has gone on, and they have CKD by definition because they've probably accrued damage with the first episode of IgA. They may have a little bit of proteinuria remaining, so we might want to add an SGLT2 inhibitor. My own personal preference is that I want to exhaust all of these other things ahead of time, and get the disease under control, and then use the SGLT2 inhibitor as a sort of long-term maintenance. But I'm also not stopping my foundational therapy at any point.
To summarize our discussion, the key points I want to emphasize with the evolving treatment options are, first, to maximize foundational therapy, and these are non-immunosuppressive agents working in the kidney that directly target glomerular injury. Following intervention with foundational therapies, we can look in selected patients to the anti-inflammatory therapies, which are currently steroids, and perhaps in the future, targeting complement. And finally, I favor the use of SGLT2 inhibitors in patients with IgA nephropathy who have first been optimized with these strategies, but now have developed established chronic kidney disease and should receive standard of care for chronic kidney disease to benefit both kidney and cardiovascular outcomes. In this time of exciting drug development in IgA nephropathy, it's really critical to understand the pathophysiology of the disease so we can approach treatment optimization through targeting the various sources of disease progression. As we're learning more about the impact of achieving lower proteinuria targets to preserve kidney health for longer, I'm delighted that my colleague, Professor John Barrett, will moderate our next podcast and discuss unmet needs in IgA nephropathy, burden of disease, and incorporating the patient's voice. It's clear that after a very long period of limited options in IgA management, we're entering an exciting time with many new therapies and therapeutic interventions available to us. I hope this discussion has been of value to your practice. Thank you for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed our first rare kidney disease show, part of the RKD Scientific Network, sponsored by Travere Therapeutics.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of the Rare Kidney Disease Show, part of the RKD Scientific Network and powered by Travere Therapeutics.